Welcome everybody to the Friday Night Inner Space Talk. Today we have the topic Sharpen Your Focus and Manage Your Distractions. Our speaker is joining us from the Blue Mountains in Australia. We have a retreat centre there and Gabriella is based there. And so she's talking to us from Australia. So it's rather early on Saturday morning for Gabriella. 5:30 is it for you?
It is 5:30.
So it's 5:30 for Gabriella. So thank you for joining us so early, Gabriella. Let me introduce you to your speaker today. So if you were listening to a little chat earlier, you'll have realized that originally Gabriella Martin was an artist, but has since worked in social development at local government level and ministry level in New Zealand. Currently, she's working locally in the Blue Mountains. She's training and teaching and helping people develop their skills so that they are in a better position to serve their communities. So that's Gabriella. We've asked her to share on a couple of different concepts about focus. So how to manage distractions. At the moment, life is pretty intense. If it's not Zoom, it's the fact that at least in the UK, we're still in lockdown. And so there's so many more distractions, and yet we're trying to stay focused and productive in our workplaces, in our educational systems. And so how do we manage distractions? What skills do I need to sharpen my ability to focus better? And then thirdly, how to build our concentration power? After her talk, Gabriella is going to be able to do a short meditation for us, and then she'll be taking your questions. I'm going to request you put your questions on the question and answer link in your email, and I will be taking your questions and asking Gabriella your questions on your behalf. So that will be after her talk. So do feel free to send in your questions. Gabriella, I'm going to hand over to you now and look forward to hearing your insights. Thank you.
Thank you, Arti. Thanks very much for your warm introduction. It's just been a pleasure to reconnect with you. And good morning or good evening, everyone in London. Yes, Arti's set the scene for us. Our conversation this evening is on focus. And I'd just like to bring up my screen and share some slides with you. Here we go. I'm hoping you can see the screen. So great. Just lower me down. So just pulling things together here. So our topic, sharpen our ability to focus, manage our distractions and build our concentration power. And when I began to consider this topic, and it was a little bit random, a random topic. I was a little bit surprised that Arti had asked me to talk on it, but very happy to. And I scanned the popular culture landscape to see what was out there in terms of strategies and tips and what people were advising us to do to improve our focus or improve our concentration power. And I looked at a little bit of the research there as well. And I harnessed this with my own personal experiences of being focused. And there was something that stood out for me during this process, and it was this comment here about focus. And it was coming from people, I think from people working in social development, and they were positioning it very, very clearly and very strongly as a cornerstone. And they were saying that it's a gateway to all thinking, perception, memory, learning, reasoning, problem solving, and decision making. And they're just basically saying that without good focus, all aspects of your ability to think suffer. So if you can't focus effectively, you can't think effectively. And that's fairly fundamental, isn't it? I thought it was they were really positioning it very strongly. And working in social development, I had a quick look at the Australian stats on road crashes. And sure enough, right up there at the top, one of the top four causes of fatal car crashes in Australia is driver inattentiveness or being distracted while we're driving. And, you know, road crashes or driving is just one aspect of our daily living. But this need to be focused and to stay focused is really pivotal to our well-being, quite obviously. And so I wanted to have a look at some of those strategies with you in our conversation. And I also wanted to bring in an approach that I've been experimenting with, and it's about being internally focused. It's an inner approach to focus. So not so much focusing on the external, but looking more at the internal. And that when I have a calm state of mind, then my ability to focus is magnified, is increased. And so it becomes more about a vision-guided life and less about a condition-driven life. So that was what I was going to do with you during our conversation this evening. I hope that meets your expectations. I'm assuming it will. And of course, if it doesn't, you can always ask me questions later and I'll see if I can answer them. So if you're happy with that, we'll get going. So out there in the popular culture landscape, I was kind of seeing maybe three or four different categories that these tips or these strategies came into. And some were to do with my body and my well-being, my health and well-being. Other things were to do with the way I approach my day, how I structure up my day. And then there were other things that were talking very much about my external environment. And the ones I've got on the screen here, train your brain, these things are about, obviously, about my body. And there's lots of games you can do on when you Google that will help you do that, ways that you can train your brain to improve your concentration power. And beware that when I did a quick Google, there was something like 376,000 different hits. So there's a lot out there, and which tells us that people are very interested in being able to do this. And there's a lot of people and a lot of experts out there that are giving us different strategies to do this. But some really very obviously basic ones about my body maintenance, my health and well-being, improve your sleep. And there's a book there by Dr. Sarah Mednick, who's written a book called Tips for Better Sleeping, or Take a Nap. And it's about, you know, just taking 20 minutes if you need to have a sleep, because sleep's a great way to be able to regenerate your body and, of course, then focus. But obvious things like take exercise, do it regularly, spend time in nature, and take a break. And there's lots of techniques about that are very, very structured, you know, like 25 minutes of concentration, then you put your clock on and your alarm clock on, and then at the end of that 25 minutes, you take a break, and then you go back to your work and so on. So there's a lot of structured techniques out there. Eating healthily and no junk food, that's a bit of a no-brainer, isn't it? That a lot of evidence, and perhaps your personal experience too, will tell you that eating healthily will contribute to your focus a lot more than eating a lot of junk food. And then people were saying things like drinking coffee help. Well, that kind of contradicts, and I was starting to see a lot of contradictions in the sort of tips that were being offered. But drinking coffee was something that a few people were saying would be useful. But those that talk about sleeping and those 20-minute naps, obviously there's a contradiction there. I think it's important to find what resonates with you. And we were seeing contradictions coming through too in terms of noise or listening to music. And really recent research is saying actually that silence is the best way for the brain to recharge, the mind to regenerate, and then for you to improve your focus that way. Moving on, these are things about structuring your day, making a to-do list. And I heard someone saying recently that the tragedy of the to-do list is that it was made by the person you were yesterday. But look, these things can be really useful. So I'm just quickly scanning them with you. Set up your day the night before. Do the most difficult things first. And I'm sure a lot of us will appreciate what a challenge that can be from time to time. Eliminating distractions, regenerating your energy, and reminding yourself of your ultimate goal. So a lot there in your body maintenance and well-being space, as well as a few things about how you might structure your day. And these things were kind of familiar to me in terms of working in social development anyway, but it was good to see them in the popular culture landscape. Here's some things coming through on what obstructs our focus, and I'm sure you're not going to be surprised about these. Open plan offices, and they were the big trend in Australia in, I think, the 80s and in New Zealand. Not sure when they, hit the trend in London, probably before then. But they're really saying now in terms of the research that it actually lowers morale and it lowers productivity. A recent study in the US showed that it lowered your morale by 68%. So 68% of employees were not engaged and not participating in their work, with a 2 hours of loss of productivity. That seems quite mechanical to me, and I don't like to look at focus as being so mechanical, but this is just some of the research that's out there. But I do know that during the COVID pandemic, and now at this point, most of the people in my organisation are working from home, and I do that too. And our teams reported what a pleasure it is, in the sense of not being in an open plan space where we're interrupted by conversation, laughter. Well, that's a nice thing too, of course, but phones ringing and people coming into the workspace. And I know there have been times when I've been actively thinking in my mind what it is that I'm typing, because the noise levels are so high, and I want to stay focused and I want to be able to finish a business paper that I'm preparing or whatever it is that I'm doing. But we've all been saying that working from home is so much easier to focus, and we're completing work more quickly. We're not as tired. Our energy isn't being as drained. The thing that we miss is the social engagement. So we often go into work 1 or 2 days a week and the rest is working from home. Not sure what your experience has been through the opportunities to work from home during the pandemic, but that's certainly one that's been a common experience here in Australia. Now look, multitasking, again, that was something that was really, shown to be and encouraged and so on, but just not that possible. And we're really seeing evidence of that now. The brain just can't toggle backwards and forwards between tasks, and we waste up to 40% of our productive time. Not at all sure how they measure that. I didn't look into it. The last one here that I've identified is social media, and that's not going to be a surprise to you. Basically, it's saying put a lock on it. And in some schools in Australia here, they've actually banned mobile phones. You have to hand them in at the beginning of the day and pick them up at the end. It's just too big a distraction to the learning process. It actually interrupts your focus just far too much. But I think amidst all of this, it's the essential question here is, what is focus to me, and what kind of conditions are useful to me, and what's my mind space like that is the most productive to being focused? And so I did a little bit of an experiment with my colleagues, and they very graciously participated, and some of the retreat guests and some friends, on what it is to focus. And I took them through a little exercise, and I'd like to do it with you too, if you're willing. It'll only take 3 or 4 minutes, maybe not even that. So if you have a pen and paper handy, that's great. If you don't, it doesn't matter. You can just do it in your mind. So just sitting comfortably, and I'd just like you to consider this question. Just think about a moment in your time, in your life, a moment or a time in your life when you felt focused, when you were completely absorbed in what you were doing, what you were thinking or being. Just scan back into your life, maybe a week ago, maybe sometime today, maybe a few years back. See if you can identify a time when you felt really, really focused. You're absorbed, completely participating in what you were doing and what you were thinking. And if you can't find a moment, that's absolutely fine. What I'd like you to do is imagine or visualize a time of yourself. Just visualize or imagine a time when you were focused. So whether it was real or imaginary, it's fine. I'm hoping you've caught a moment, identified one. And now let's unpack that a little bit. What was happening to you and during that moment? So what were you doing? What were your surroundings? Were you alone or were you with others? And now let's consider this. What were you feeling? What were the sensations in your body? Were you aware of your body? So what was happening in your body space and what were you feeling? Now let's look at this. This is about time. Were you aware of time? Was it vast? Or did time slip by unnoticed? Was time pressured? Now see if you can reflect on who you were being in that moment. What I mean by that, what was in your awareness, what was in your consciousness for you in that focused moment? So you've scanned you found a moment when you were focused in your life and you've started to unpack it. And unfortunately, I can't see you and I can't hear you, but I did this little exercise with, as I said, some people here in Australia, and we found that despite the different scenarios that we'd selected, our experience of being focused was fairly similar, and I'd like to share those with you. And I did it by way of a word cloud, some of the key experiences coming through. And this is what we noted, was that in the moment that we'd chosen or selected to unpack around being focused, some key things came through, and that was that we all felt really calm and centered. It wasn't a fragmented experience at all. We were very calm and centered, and we were completely absorbed. We were fully participating. Our head was clear. It wasn't congested, but a lot of clear-headedness. Some people talked about it being very, very creative and natural. And others talked about it in terms of time, that they were just unaware of time and it felt very expansive, or the moment felt expansive. They weren't even thinking about time. Other people talked about the feel-good energy in their body as they were creating, coming through from this calmness inside. And in terms of outcomes, people were saying things like, well, it gave me space for new things to emerge. I wasn't expecting it to be so creative, but I was really focused in that moment and lovely new things emerged. And other people just talked about there being great outcomes. So this conversation, or this response, and putting it together that way, I got into a conversation about what was it like when we weren't focused. And this is what came up. So quite a different landscape, isn't it? Quite a different headspace. And it's not to say that when I'm distracted that all distractions are bad or wrong or not helpful. Some distractions are really useful, actually. They can be moments when I'm taking a breather. They can be moments when I'm allowing new things to emerge, or maybe there being moments when the subconscious is coming through. But you'll be the best judge of that, whether your distraction is useful or whether it's actually a hindrance. But in those really distracted, hard to focus moments, these are the things that we noted were happening for us. First of all, overwhelmingly, everyone was saying our thoughts were just too fast. We felt agitated in our body, feeling like being under the pump, under pressure. Our relationship to time changed. Just too many thoughts all over the place, overthinking. Some of these other keywords coming through, being really uncentered, too much pressure, too much noise. Multitasking came in again. They felt like they were just moving from task to task and not completing them. Some people talking about phones ringing, tired, agitated, all these kinds of things coming through, couldn't concentrate. In terms of outcomes, some people were saying things that they just, they were restless, they couldn't get it, resentful of the distractions, and making mistakes, low productivity. So quite a different headspace, isn't it, between being focused, my headspace is so different, and so are the outcomes, and when I'm not focused. excuse me. So big changes, big contrasts in those headspaces. And I wanted to really start looking at, well, what is this headspace that I'm in when I'm focused? What's behind my focus? And I'm coming to it as an inner approach to focus. We know those external strategies, we've had a look at them, and they're available in the popular landscape, popular culture landscape. But what I wanted to share with you this evening is more about inner responses to focus. So it's less about the external strategies, i.e. the seen world, what's out there, and more about me being calm within myself and being present in the moment, and that allowing me to be focused, that allowing my concentration to be improved and increased on. And when I do this, it's more about a less conditioned drive life, where I'm reacting and responding to an external environment, and living a life that's more vision guided. And this too helps me focus in a particular moment. So this is where I'd like to go now with you. I love this quote from Daddy Janke. It's about being focused in a calm mind. And she's saying a calm mind is not just peaceful, it is focused, self-directing and divine. Now, for those of you who don't know Daddy Janke, and perhaps some of you met her, and perhaps some of you don't know her, but she was the co-administrative head of the Brahma Kumaris for many, many years, and she left the body. Excuse me. She died, left the body. Just 1 minute. And she was 104, and that was just about less than a year ago now. And I knew Daddy Janke for many, many years, about 40 years actually, and she always struck me as someone who was incredibly calm and focused, incredibly clear-headed, and she was like that throughout her life as a yogini. I think it was about the 1980s that some scientists did some studies on her brainwave, and Artie might remember this, that, and they described her as the most stable mind in the world. But when you'd come into her presence, you'd feel very calm and peaceful. And in that presence, you became very calm and peaceful, but also very clear-headed and focused. In fact, you didn't just need to come into her presence, you just had to come into her orbit to feel it. She was so powerful in that way. But here in this quote, she's connecting calm mind, focused, self-directing, and she's adding in there divine. And so there's something very deep about this relationship between being able to focus and having a calm state of mind. So looking at that, then I'm thinking that out of focus comes from an inner focus. So if I want to be able to focus out there in the world, and whatever I'm doing, whatever task or action I'm performing, or conversation that I'm having, or in a relationship, whatever it is, then if my inner focus is finely attuned and I'm in a calm state of mind, then I'll be able to be very present in that moment. And it's in this context that I see focus not so much as a series of strategies and so on, but as a spiritual skill. Something that's deeper than a soft skill. So soft skills are things like emotional intelligence. But I see focus as being something that's part of my spiritual intelligence, and therefore something that's available to each one of us. It's there within us, and that I can grow it if I choose to, if I'd like to do that. And one of the ways that I do that and have been doing it is through meditation. And when I started to learn Raja Yoga meditation, which is the method that I do, I wasn't learning it to be better focused or anything like that. That's actually just an outcome, as is concentration, improving your concentration power. But as a daily practitioner of meditation, I do note how much my focus has improved, how much my concentration has improved, and also how much more effective and efficient I've become not the reason that I meditated in the first instance, but a beautiful outcome. And one of the things that I like about Raj Yoga meditation is that it's open-eyed. And you know, when you're at work or just in the course of the day, of course you need your eyes open. But if I've learned to meditate and hold able to hold that consciousness that I have when I'm meditating during the day and my eyes are open, obviously, then I can hold that consciousness and bring that consciousness more easily into the actions that I'm performing, the tasks that I'm doing and so on, and into the interactions that I'm having with people. So it's a great way to meditate because it's very practical. And I found that to be of great use in my working life, but also just in my whole living, being able to hold that calm consciousness. It's silent, which is useful, and it's also thought-based. So there's no mantras, but I'm learning to focus my thoughts, absolutely focus my thoughts and direct my thoughts so that they're positive, they're calm, they're positive, they're elevated. And of course, the outcome then is focused. It is accessible and it's free, and there's a lot out there in the spiritual marketplace. So if you're looking, that may be something that that attracts you, that it's free of charge. And it is free of charge because people volunteer their time to teach it because they've experienced so much benefit from it. So that's probably my first kind of, I wouldn't call it a strategy, but an application in the sense that if I'm wanting to be better focused in my life, if I want to improve it, then a calm state of mind is a beginning point, and meditation is one of the things that really does help that. But there's other things to consider as well. And this whole thing about observing my state of mind, I've put up a few words here: overthinking, self-doubt, and blaming others. And, you know, when we step into a path of self-reflection or personal self-development, or just the desire to be able to improve my focus and minimize my distractions, I think a lot comes up in our headspace. And these three things tend to be what intrudes our headspace and causes distraction. And it's really understandable. We step into the space and we bring with us our baggage, and we all have a big story, don't we? And some of that story is about our own self-doubt, you know, thinking that I'm not good enough, or that I'm not worthy enough, or I can't do something. And often our thoughts or a task is interrupted by this type of thinking. And I don't know about you, but most people who come to our retreats and a practice that I've been working on is this practice to not overthink. Some social scientists say that we have about 50,000 to 70,000 thoughts a day. That's a lot of thinking, a lot going on in our headspace. But this overthinking, thinking of things of the past or thinking of things with anxiety as we forecast the future, but not being present and not being able to focus for that reason. And blaming others is another one too. We have a bit of a habit to attribute our pain or our misfortune or our suffering to other people. And what you might note when you're focusing is this is where your mind goes, to these sorts of things. So becoming aware of my distracting thoughts and changing them is key to being able to stay focused. So all I need to do is actually this little technique called SOS, and it's one that I love. And I think the more you practice it, the better you get at it. And it just means stand back, observe, and stare. And I think of it as a little meditation technique, really. So I'm trying to focus on a task, or I am focusing on it, and I find myself being distracted, or I'm in a conversation and my mind's going somewhere else. What I'm going to do is I just note it. I stand back and I'm noting it. And I observe what's coming onto the screen of my mind, what's interrupting my focus, and I park it. And a distracted thought is just something that I'm having at the wrong time. It's not necessarily wrong or good or bad, but it's just interrupting my focus. So I observe it, I park it, and then I steer my mind where I want it to go. So stand back, observe, and steer. It's a lovely little technique. It's easy to remember. And it's something that you can do while you're staying in the moment, you know, while you're staying engaged with your task, but you've been a little bit distracted. There's something else that I wanted to share with you, and that's about filling your mind with calm and positive thoughts. And this is one thing that I like to do, and it's about practicing gratitude every day, every day. So I'm keeping my thoughts in the up cycle, and I'm keeping my mind calm and positive, and therefore improving my ability to focus during the day. Now, I'm going to tell you a little story here. A few years back, I was doing a job that I'd chosen to do. And it wasn't my dream job, but it was a job that I wanted to do because I knew that it would take a certain amount of my energy, and that was great. And I was very happy to contribute in that way. But I wanted to use a lot of my other energy to start up something else in my life. And so this particular employment, as I said, wasn't a dream job, but it was one that I was wanting to do and wanting to contribute to as well. And one of the things I was aware of is that probably within about 3 or 4 months, I could be quite bored in that job. And I really didn't want that to happen because, as I say, I wanted to contribute and be fully present in it. And So I put into my logon and my password the word grateful. And so every time I logged on at work, I was reminding myself to be grateful. And I'd find things to be grateful about, to appreciate. And after a while, it just was no effort to do that at all. It was just so totally easy to do it. The lovely people that I worked with, the environment, the tasks that we were doing, the outcomes we were getting, the processes we were using. And I'd always do this of just finding good things to like. It's a lovely protection in terms of your mind and your mental energy and being able to maintain your mental energy to stay focused. But it's just a gorgeous way to enjoy your day and enjoy each other as well. So those two combinations of having a little technique there for when you do get distracted, your SOS, but buffering yourself and keeping yourself really energized through practicing gratitude. Here's another one that I think is really useful. It's about inner peace pauses to stay focused. So even during the day, you know, you find that you get congested and your mind gets tired or perhaps confused. And you want to keep yourself fresh. You know, we keep ourselves fresh in terms of our body. We make sure we're well hydrated, lots of glasses of water or whatever it is, and looking after our body. But I need to really take care of my mind as well. And these little peace pauses are great during the day. They're just 60 seconds of when I step back from what I'm doing. And especially if you've learnt to meditate with your eyes open, it's totally invisible what you're doing. People won't even realize around you that you've just stepped out of the external environment for 60 seconds and stepped into your internal environment, your unseen world, your inner landscape, turned inwards to do a recharge. And silence is for the brain. It's wonderful oxygen, just as water hydrates the body, you know. And so this is the little thing that I do. It's called a peace pause. The one that I've used sometimes is Just a Minute. You might know about it, www.justaminute.org. It's a free download and a great way to remind yourself to take those little step backs from the hustle and the bustle to keep yourself highly energized and focused. And of course, when you need to do it is when you think you haven't got time, but actually that's when you most need to meditate. To take that little peace pause, the little step back, you're really just moving back into your inner landscape and recharging so that you can come back and re-engage with your task, staying very focused. I like this balance, silence and action, and I often think about it as being positive opposites. So I need silence. The mind needs silence, or it needs to meditate with some beautiful commentary, but it needs that to recharge and then to express itself in action. And if all I do is task, 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 action, 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 then life becomes very routine, very dry, very mechanical, perhaps even boring. And I get very de-energized. I lose my energy, I lose my focus, so I need to step back into silence. So this combination of positive opposites, I think it works really well. It's a fantastic combination. Just about finishing up here, and I really wanted to just mention time, because that came through in the word cloud that I shared earlier, that when we're focused, it feels like time's expensive. And when I'm not focused or distracted, there's the feeling that time is really prescient and constricted and restricted. And it's also sometimes comes with that external environment about being very pressured and working to deadlines. So I wanted to unpack this whole relationship that we have with time. And you'll see here that I've talked about it as being focused, to be in tune with time. Now, I like this quote again. It's from Daddy Janki. To be wise is to use the treasure of time well. And I like to come into relationship with time. So instead of it feeling very pressured, I want to think of time as being my friend and being there for me and working with time to achieve, to accomplish, or to be together in a way. I'm going to share a little story with you. I went into the office a few years back of a yogini, a very, very refined yogini, and to collect something. And as I was in her office, I saw on her coffee table a huge ream of single sheets, A3, A4 sheets of paper, and it was really thick. And I could see that each sheet was a different email requiring a different response and requiring her time, obviously. And she just said to me that it was what she was doing before the next class. And I looked at it and I thought, gosh, the next class is about 40 minutes away. That's a lot to do. And I just wondered about the bandwidth. Certainly the capability was there, but the bandwidth, the capacity to work with something that required a lot of attention in such a short space of time. And she must have picked up my thought because she just flicked through the sheet, you know, with her thumb and her forefinger, the wad of paper. And as she did that, she said, if I stay calm enough, I'll be able to do it. And, you know, you never know when someone says something significant to you that you're going to remember. And it's always gorgeous when those moments happen. And that was something that was said to me that I've remembered over many years, and I've really experimented with and explored this whole relationship to time, because what you're saying there was time opens up. If I'm calm enough and I'm doing this work, these tasks that need to be done, then I can be very respectful of time. And in that space of calmness, in that space of being, and therefore being focused and being attentive, that time opens up, it expands. And I've had lots of experiences like that too. And I think it's a lovely way of coming into relationship with time, rather than it being, you know, I've got to manage time and I've got to conquer time. It's one of relationship and a very beautiful way to relate to it. And in connection with time, well, you know, there's often those moments about procrastination. And I think you need to be very judicious about this and self-reflective. Sometimes we need space where it looks like we're not doing too much, but actually there's a lot happening in our subconscious, and where there's ideas percolating, there's new ideas emerging, and it's not so much procrastination, it's just there's things underground that are happening that need that space to come through. But you'll know yourself if you're procrastinating and putting things off. But when I'm using time really well, and when I'm in relationship with time, then I can attend to the small things, and I can attend to the things that are perhaps more challenging or the more difficult tasks. And I'll make sure that there's enough space in case something extra comes up that I'm not aware of, but that comes onto my radar later and needs to be attended to. So procrastination, look, ultimately I'm responsible for my own boredom, my avoidance, and my time. So that really is a very empowering way to look at procrastination. But as I say, if I'm really honest, I'll be able to work out whether this is downtime that I need just to be able to let new things emerge. And a lot of people talk about the great ideas that happen when they're gardening and they're not thinking analytically. They're allowing their creativity to come through. Or whether indeed I'm procrastinating. So when I'm using time in this way of time, actually being my friend and I'm in tune with it and we're working together, I notice that I'm making the best use of it. And here's this lovely quote again from Daddy Janki, to be in the present is to make the best use of it. And when I'm in relationship in this way, then I am being present. My mind's calm, I'm focused, I'm working with time, and I'm being attentive with whatever I'm doing or whoever I'm with. And we know that the point of power is always in the present. I can reframe experiences of the past, but what I do in the present determines the quality of my living in the present, but also the quality of my living in the future, what comes to me in the future. So I wanted to wrap up with you about this whole idea of my life focus, you know, my life purpose, and is it by default or is it by design? And my present creates my fortune, my future. I think that's pretty well understood, but it's my choice when it comes to focus and when it comes to my concentration and minimizing my distractions. And if I react, if I get into situations where I'm thinking of, you know, taking and getting and transacting and measuring and I'm reacting to situations, then it'll be a condition-driven life, yeah? I'm reacting to it and I'm dependent on those conditions. If it's not too noisy, I'll be able to do it. If someone's not in the office today, I'll be able to do it, yeah? Or whatever it is, it's dependent. Alternatively, it can be a vision-guided life, a designed life, where it's vision-guided. And when I'm calm and I'm attending to my inner state, the unseen world, then the outer world flows from that. And it's more of a vision-guided life. And that's actually a big conversation. It's much bigger than what we're focusing on tonight. But I wanted to throw that in there because the bigger picture is always useful in terms of being focused in the moment. So I think that's about it. I'd like to pause there with you. And it might be useful for us to go into a meditation together. So let's see. Yes, it rests on what I choose to focus on today. So look, let's do a meditation together on focus and see where that takes us. So if you just like to sit comfortably, I've put an image on my screen that you might like to focus on if you choose to keep your eyes open. Or maybe you'd like to close them, whatever works for you. The most important thing is that you have an experience. So just sitting comfortably. Allow yourself just to sit really comfortably in your chair or wherever you're sitting. And begin to feel your body relaxing and coming into stillness. And if there's any sounds outside in the external world, the seen world, just let them fade into the background. Switch off your phone. Give yourself permission just to be with you for the next 3 minutes or so. I'm making my environment free from distractions. And now just for a moment, put aside the unseen world, the roles that you play, the responsibilities that you may have, and move away from the identity you get from the markers of your body, like your age, your gender, your race, your nationality, and so on. Yes, that's right. Just putting everything of the outside world aside for these next few moments. And so feeling my body relaxing, my body gives me permission to turn within. And I set my intention for this meditation. I wish to experience my own unique inner vibration of calmness. I turn my attention inwards and I journey within. On the screen of my mind, I visualize a point of light. It is as if I am looking into a spiritual mirror And in the spiritual mirror, I see myself in my soul form, a point of light with my own unique vibration and energy. That's me, this infinitesimal point of light radiating in the center of my forehead. And I allow myself to feel my own inner calmness. So peaceful, so still. It feels like gentle waves of peace washing over me and radiating from me. And I feel centered and secure. I'm absorbed in this calm sea of tranquility. And I notice that my thoughts have slowed down completely. It's as if there's just calmness here in this space. My mind is calm. My mind is self-directing and focused. I am the creator. And I become aware of my natural ability to direct my thoughts and focus on what is the things that I choose to focus on. Becoming aware of this, I bring my inner calm and focus back to the external world and see myself being present and focused in everything that I do, my tasks, my activities, my relationships, my ideas, my conversations, the roles that I play. I choose what I absorb and what I observe. I maintain the balance of inner silence and outer focused action. I'm present, focused and calm. And I can be this whenever I choose to turn within. This is part of a vision-guided life. And I bring myself back to this moment, focused and calm. Om Shanti.
Thank you, Gabriella. That was very beautiful. Okay, questions. So the first one is, I'd like to feel more relaxed and focused. Currently, what happens to me is I get tense when I focus, especially when there's a lot of detailed work. What can I do to help this process? I do meditate already.
So, detailed work is very taxing. And so you're saying that you can focus, but it's that you can't relax while you're focusing.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Look, it is a little bit of an art, but I guess the first thing there is that you're really aware of it. So, and realization is a great way to bring about change. It is about practicing, actually, and some of the work that I've done, it has been very detailed, and at the end of it, and I'm very absorbed in it, and perhaps sometimes we can be over-absorbed, and it might be a thing of just actually making yourself take breaks from it, so that you're not staying really absorbed for many, many hours at a time without actually taking what you need for your body to be relaxed. If you're really calm as you create and do your detailed work, it's unlikely that that should be really tense in your body, because when your mind is calm, then it flows into your body. But if it's like a structural thing, then there's obviously things that you can do there ergonomically and so on. But if I was in that situation, I'd be really looking to see if I'm, you know, just to be taking actual stretch breaks during that period of concentration when I'm actually really focused and performing some activity. Maybe the peace pauses would help, where you're really just getting up, moving your body and giving yourself that 60-second peace pause and a break. It's a little bit of an art, but I think it's just practice and practice. When I worked as an artist, I could design things and, you know, all day and go home and still do it. Maybe I was really young then and didn't notice the impact it was having on my body. I'm not sure. But these days I make myself get up and stretch and change what I'm doing for a short period of time and going back to it, doing those stretch breaks and things like that for your body as well as your mind. I hope that helps. I'm not sure it does, but I hope it helps.
Well, something to try. So thank you. Next question. I find focus very challenging and have a tendency to procrastinate to avoid the discomfort of processing thought in a more constructive way. I have recently embraced meditation and it's early days, but I do attain the simple discipline of thought and intention. My brain has an auto filter and it can be very selective no matter what is on my priority list.
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's pretty omnipresent, this thing of procrastinating, and I think it's familiar to most of us. And you're in a good position to judge, you know, whether this is a moment where I'm procrastinating or whether I do need this bit of downtime. Look, it's practice, 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 actually. Our minds are so used to avoiding and for so many years and even longer, we've had this practice of just avoiding things and putting things off that we know we need to attend to. And it is a little bit about self-discipline, and that combination of meditation and self-discipline, you can really overcome procrastination. Some of the tips in you know, popular culture landscape around focus look at procrastination, and they, you know, talk about things like setting up rewards. So go and do this and then you can do what you really want to do. Part of it is around loving what you're doing, so that it doesn't feel like you're putting it off, but you actually really actively want to get in there and get engaged with it. Sometimes procrastination can happen because you're thinking about something else and it's really pushing you. And I find it interesting that meditation comes from the Latin word meditere, which means to heal. And so sometimes our mind is coming up with things that needs to be healed and needs to be addressed. So depending on why you're procrastinating would determine the kind of strategy that you might want to put in place there. I've suggested two or three options there, or two, three reasons why you might be procrastinating. For me, when I find myself procrastinating, I do become very aware of it. And because I've been really actively, for quite a while now, engaging with time in this really positive way, so I'm not thinking of it as time management strategies, but I'm kind of like in relationship with time and don't want to waste it, because then time responds by closing up on me. But I want to be working with time and feel like I'm working together with time. It's a lovely consciousness to have that I've found pretty much eliminates a lot of procrastination that I would have otherwise got into. And I think just lastly, the enjoyment of the task. If you can find things about what you're putting off, about the task or the activity that you're putting off doing, if you can find things that, again, the gratitude factor coming in, that you really like about it and good reasons why you want to do it, then that also helps reduce the amount of procrastination, because you'll be participating, be wanting to get in and do it. So those are a couple of tips around procrastination. But I do feel that, you know, if you're already meditating in its early days, you're absolutely on the right track. Keep with it. It is one of those practice. And you don't actually have to be practicing on getting rid of your procrastination. That'll happen naturally as you increase your meditation. That's been my experience anyway. So you're on the right track there. Good on you.
Thank you. Okay, next question is, if you're trying to focus, but you find that a situation keeps coming back into your mind, you thought you've understood it and resolved it, but it still keeps interrupting whatever you're focusing on. How do you handle that? Is it just keep pushing it away, or is there something else I can be doing? Is it because it's a mental habit of holding on to negative things? Or is it because there's something still that needs to be resolved?
Wow, that's a gorgeous question. Thank you. Thank you for that. And I think it's an experience that probably resonates with many of us. It's a little bit like this, things that come into, and you've got a lot of insight there, that's something that you're wanting to focus, but you're thinking about something else and it's distracting you and it's repeating. You're repeatedly thinking about that same thing. Now, we can be distracted by the lovely high things or the things that are more challenging in terms of thoughts that come into my mind. But if something is repeatedly coming into my mind, what that tells me is that it's looking for resolution. It's coming into my mind because it wants to be healed. It wants to be resolved. And it's a little bit about what I was talking about when I referred to overthinking things, just going over and over the same thing and not getting anywhere except feeling very, very tired, as I've wasted a lot of energy thinking things that I don't want to think about in that moment. And of course, I've wasted time as well. Doing that. But I think you've actually answered the question yourself, that it is something deeper and it's requiring resolution. So you can still do all the tasks that you need to do, but tell yourself that you're going to resolve it. And it may be something that needs to be resolved in meditation. Maybe it's a conversation that you need to have with someone. Maybe it's some personal reflective work that you need to do. I'm not sure of your details, but if it's, say, for example, it's something that's causing you sadness from something that's happened in the past and you need to let it go so you can be present and you can focus on your present life, then that requires a lot of different things that could help there. And meditation is one of those things. Meditation will naturally heal those things. The more that I engage with positive thoughts, then the sorrows of the past can recede and stay in the past. And the more that in my meditation I engage with my natural happiness, my natural positivity, then it gently massages the things that I'm holding on to that are causing me sorrow and that disrupt my moment of when I'm in the present moment when I'm trying to focus. So it works like that in terms of being able to resolve it. Sometimes it's the inner, well, it's not just one thing or another. You can use this combination of your meditation, and the example I gave was a sad moment, then just massaging it away with engaging with myself internally, my own natural happiness. And I haven't focused on this in our conversation tonight, but if you have a sense of the divine, then using the colouring yourself with the company of the divine and bringing in that natural happiness and calmness so that it eases the sadness that you might be experiencing that's distracting you during your day. So it does take a little bit of time, but it does resolve. And these are some strategies that I've personally used to good effect in terms of being interrupted by a repeated pattern of thinking and wanting to change it and bring it into equilibrium. Yeah. Hopefully that will help.
Thank you. The next question is, again, about procrastination, but you might be able to take it in another direction. This is also from an artist. The person is an actor and dancer. And they're saying that they struggle with their relationship with time. Either they get too task-driven or, annoyingly, procrastinate. They've tried to work on how to make it work seamlessly for them, but it has been a struggle. And when you do have downtime, it becomes a bit of a super guilty session. So how do you stop the guilt and kind of find a balance and equilibrium between going full on and being task driven or annoyingly procrastinate?
Gosh, you've summed up an experience I think that we all have, and you've summed it up really, really well. Yes, this relationship being, you know, you're not wanting to be task driven, and that's a challenge in an environment and a global reality where it's all about accomplishing and, you know, having things done fast, 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 and having them done yesterday, and so much riding on this, on accomplishing, and that being our measure of our success. And then, you know, when you do take time out feeling guilty about it, it's such a, what I guess that last slide I shared with you about a condition-driven life, and that's part of what a condition-driven life is like, and wanting to be able to move to a more vision-guided life where I'm not thinking of, I'm thinking more of contributing. It's such a switch in my consciousness. And I think that's really what it's required, that a switch in our consciousness, so that, yes, we're still doing those things, but my approach to doing those things has changed. My consciousness has changed, and the way I'm delivering it therefore changes too. So, you know, stepping into, firstly, really appreciating that you need time out and to be able to relax and not beat yourself up about that. So just, you know, getting rid of that, any sense of guilt. And you can do that by really actively engaging in some affirmations. I am worthy. I do deserve this rest. You know, these sorts of things. Find out, do a little bit of time working on some affirmations that allow you to really deeply acknowledge your own self-worth, and that part of your life of balance is taking rest and all the other things that you need to do to keep your life in balance. When I do that and appreciate myself in that way, and it's like self-compassion, it's self-kindness, then I can give to others, but I need to be able to do that for myself first. Moving myself away from being driven, you know, that requires constant attention, really, because we've been programmed that way. You know, it's a very driven life. And I think it begins with some work on a vision-guided life. And some of the things you can do there, especially if you already have, you know, a very open channel of creativity there for you, is there's lots of things there. But one thing that I'm thinking of is to consider, what do I, some exercises really, so you need a bit of time to do it and to self-reflect in this way. But, you know, to ask yourself, what do I really, really love about? And then there's four areas. What do I really love the most? And allow yourself to be really free in asking that question. And then bring it into my health and well-being. Yeah? And then bring it into another quadrant, another area about vocation. And it might not be your paid employment, but what would I really love the most about? If I could have anything I wanted, anything that I needed, what do I really love the most about these things? My health and well-being, my vocation, which may not be your job, but your vacation, your reason for being in life, your contribution, about relating and love, my relationships, the way I relate, and then about my time, my money, and freedom. And it's a lovely way to start to engage in a more vision-guided life. And write really freely. It's not bullet points. They're not lists. It's free form writing. And as you write at least a page on each of those things, you can start to see what it is that you really like and what it is that motivates you, and think about it in your best way, like your higher self speaking. This is what I really most love. And when you start to align your life that way, you find that procrastination just goes, because you're aligning your present. Your present is aligned to what your future wants it to be, your bigger purpose. And I think procrastination is often, sometimes, yes, it is because I've got into a habit of wasting time and idle moments. But other times it isn't that. It's necessary to just to recharge a little bit, because in our conscious living, we actually don't give time to ourselves to do that. And I think that when you start moving into a more vision-guided life, that automatically that driven life recedes. You're responding more from your own inner joy of living and conscious living to what you're wanting to do, rather than thinking I have to do it and I'm reacting in that way to it. So I'm engaging quite differently with it. And if I can see that something I'm doing in the moment isn't, you know, 100% passion for me, but it's where I'm going, then I can bring 100% passion into it, because I can see my bigger picture. I can see my bigger focus there. So that's one of the kind of little strategies that I think are useful when you want to get out of that driven life. You know, it's so full of conditions, it's hard drive, and move into more of a flow with life, and a life that you've created where you're the protagonist rather than, you know, the reactive victim, which can sometimes go with, which does go with being very driven, a driven life.
The next question is also on procrastination, but it's slightly different. the person's saying, I often procrastinate when there is fear of the outcome. How do I confront this fear?
Wow. Look, you know, I love that question. Thank you for asking it. You know what fear stands for? False evidence appearing real. It's not our nature to be afraid, actually. Your nature is secure, is peace, is calm. Your nature is power. You're naturally strong. This is your nature. This is who you really are. These are your soul qualities. They exist there in your spiritual intelligence, your DNA of the soul. Those are your qualities. It's embedded deeply there. And I think to remind yourself of that is so powerful and so useful when you find yourself in a situation that you're avoiding something because you're afraid of it. Yeah. And we can waste a lot of time just by avoiding something that we know we need to face. It's such a common human experience, isn't it? So my thinking around that is that, you know, to really harness yourself in your own innate, strong, powerful qualities. And to remind yourself too of times, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the cycle of thoughts, and how very quickly we can move from, you know, a very positive thought into a negative state of thinking. And when we're trying to change our cycle of thinking, that you start by reminding yourself of things that you've done well, or things where you've not, in your instance, of times when you've not been afraid, yeah? And reminding yourself of that, and reminding yourself of times in your life where you've overcome your fear. So you're building up your confidence, your self-confidence. And then perhaps you might want to just pause for a moment and look at the situation that you're afraid of. You know, when we unpack the things that we're afraid of, there's really nothing there. You know, there's nothing there, particularly when I'm stable in my own sense of who I am and my innate qualities. And really what we realized, that the greatest fear was the fear itself, not the thing behind the fear, or the focus of the fear, the thing that we thought we were afraid of. So there's a lot of different strategies that you can use there to overcome fear. I'm not sure what your fear is, But these are some of the things that help with it. If it's a fear that is, you know, around maybe it's a conversation that you need to have with someone and you're a bit afraid about it, so a courageous conversation, then practice it. Practice it before. Think about it in your mind. Visualize yourself doing it. Think of the words that you're going to say, and enter it that way. If it's something that you're afraid of, like public speaking, there's plenty of people who come from backgrounds of speech impediments and fear of people who are brilliant public speakers and have learned to do that. So I'm not sure what your fear is there, but there's things that you can do, whatever it is, to overcome it. If it's a particular phobia, then look into that, look into the antidote, how you antidote that fear, and it can be more specific. But as a generic approach to fear, it's false evidence appearing real. And as a generic approach to fear, it's never as bad as you think it is. It's always anticipated. And the third thing about fear is that when I step into my own personal power and a deep appreciation of who I am, my value here is because I exist, I am valued. And those inner soul qualities of your strength, your power, your calm, your wisdom, your courage, these things, bring them forward, and it's a beautiful platform from which to confront any fear. And of course, when you do that, you find that the procrastination ceases. Yeah, it just fades away. Good on you. Good wishes with it. I hope you're going to do it. You're lovely. I do remember a quote from Anais Nin once, and she said that, and it was a card that I used to have on my wall. She's a writer, as you may well know. And it said, life shrinks or expands according to your courage. Life shrinks or expands according to your courage. And I thought that's a lovely way to approach fear. You know, don't even use the word. See it in the positive. My life will shrink or expand according to my courage. I have courage. Let me step it into this space and apply it here.
Wow. Could you repeat the name of the author of that quote?
Anais Nin, A-N-N-I-S-N-I-N, I think something like that.
All right, thank you. The other question, next question. I feel burnt out by my 30 years of working in the NHS, that's the National Health Service in England or in the UK. How can I restore my mind for concentration and health as I'm retiring soon? Just before you respond, I just want to say thank you for your service. 30 years is no small time of looking after people and their health, and not just the person who's sick, but their families. And so thank you very, very much for doing that. And over to you.
Yeah, that's beautiful. And I'd like to echo Artie's comments. Thank you so much for your huge contribution to your community. This whole issue of burnout is so prevalent, isn't it? And it has big implications. It has implications financially. It has implications on our environment, for the people we're in relationship with. It has implications primarily for you, and on your body and your mind. So approaching burnout and how do I recover from it, it's... I'm probably not the greatest expert on this, but let me give you a few ideas around it, and then I can share with you, and you can determine if they're useful for you or not. But I think it's really time to put yourself forward, firstly, primarily. One of the things that happen that I'm aware of in my career in social development is that carers are often give their care to themselves last. Actually, in a balanced life, we care for ourselves first, because when I'm full, I can then contribute to others. And when I'm working in a system of caring like the NHS, or the equivalent over here is our health service, it's very taxing. It doesn't really look at that equation of care for the self first and then others, it has it the other way around, doesn't it? And so stress and burnout often result. So as you approach your retirement, it really is time for you to readdress that equation and put yourself first. Absolutely. You've served for long enough. And now it's time for you to give that beautiful nurturing and care to yourself physically, and also mentally. Now, mentally, you'll know what to do physically. I'm not sure of your physical landscape, but and what your body needs. If it needs nutrition and health, then there's a lot of alternative therapies around that could help with that. But in terms of your mental landscape, your mind, I do think gentle meditation is the best power that exists, the best healing power, and the best way to restore your mind. Don't try and do challenging tasks. Allow yourself to just, you know, go for a walk in nature and actually not go over all the things that have happened or anything like that, but consciously be aware of where you are and allow the vibrations of the gorgeous trees around you or the beach, wherever you are, to actually enter your mind space and help clean that out and breathe that fresh air. If those things aren't available to you, that's fine. You can visualize it and the impact will be the same. So gentle visualizations of yourself as being restored, you know, and allowing your body and your mind to heal and be restored. And there's some lovely meditation commentaries that I'm sure are available at Inner Space, and a lot of them can be downloaded free as well. The Brahma Kumaris do gorgeous meditations on this. Carmen Warrington here in Australia, and I think her CDs might be available in Inner Space, and Artie can guide you on that. But they're gorgeous meditations that are used to actually regain our mental well-being. And this would be my number one go-to in terms of being able to recharge myself mentally as I am, you know, if I'm in a burnt out space. You deserve it. You do totally deserve this time of retirement and to treat yourself to putting yourself first, you first.
If you are interested in any of those CDs, do drop me a line on info@innerspace.org.uk and we'll definitely help you with acquiring those CDs. Next question. Are you still okay for another few minutes?
For another few minutes is fine. It's a Saturday for me and I am going to be speaking at the retreat or sharing with the retreat guests later this morning, but definitely time now, definitely. Okay.
All right. So the next question is, I really like the vision created life and would like to be more happy and have more fun. What do you do to keep that intention going for yourself and not slip into the same old self?
Yeah, it's a lovely process of transition, isn't it? As we allow the things that don't hold us anymore or the things that to slip away and embrace the new. And it's like a shifting space, isn't it? That period of transition. And actually we're doing it all the time, but to be consciously aware of it is vision guided rather than morphing into it. It does take a little bit of, it takes your conscious time, actually, your conscious effort. It's not a lot of time, but I think to do that work on a vision guided life so that it works for you. And it's not about, I mentioned those sort of four quadrants, if you like. What do I most love? What would I most love in terms of my health and well-being? And visualizing it and seeing it. And it's not about asset building or a to-do list. It's not about that at all. It's about my conscious approach to my health and well-being, my conscious approach to fun and laughter and joy. Yeah. And when you do that exercise, and it's probably something that requires a conversation on its own rather than just this quick answer, but when you do that exercise, things will emerge and allow it to unfold, give it some time, go back to it a week later and change it and speak it out loud. And as you do this, you set your intention for it, and it becomes more present in your present life, so that you are not so quickly drawn back to the more mechanical and dry way of doing things. Now, what I want to say here is that it doesn't mean that your outer world will change necessarily. It might, it often does, but you still need to do certain tasks, don't you, for everyday living, but your consciousness, your attitude towards it changes so that you enjoy it. You might find that, like, let's take a mechanical task like doing dishes, and I know there's dishwashers now, but let's go back to the days when you handed your dishes or something like that, things you've got to do that are every day. You know you've got to do it, and if you want to enjoy it, then it's about my consciousness, isn't it? Because I can't always be laughing with friends or whatever, but I can get that pleasure, that joy of living from my consciousness, with the consciousness that I approach my daily tasks. I'm going to give you a little example. I have a friend who loves ironing his shirts for work, and he would always iron them on a Sunday afternoon if he could. And he did it because he actually really liked ironing. So it wasn't about, you know, reframing his joy for ironing, because he already liked it. But because he liked it, he put all that energy into it. And on Monday morning when he got up, he was actually feeling quite stressed about his to-do list. And when he put his shirt on, he felt instantly light. And because when he'd been ironing it the day before, he'd been feeling light and energized, and that vibration had gone into his shirt. So there's a lot to be said about vibrations and how we can impact them on the task that we're doing. So if I'm looking for joy in my life, yes, doing that exercise with the vision guided life will be very, very useful. But also know that I can imbue joy and laughter and fun into my everyday activities if I choose to, depending on my consciousness. So there's always going to be things I need to do. If I can change my attitude to it, and therefore change my experience of it by bringing a different consciousness to it. Yeah.
Thank you. This is a slightly different take on a similar question I posed to you earlier, I think. The person is able to focus on their tasks and get things done. But as soon as the task is done, they find themselves dwelling on relationship issues that they are facing. So how do you recover from that?
It's really lovely that that you're able to focus on a task and get things done. So that it's not interrupting, you know, your attention to daily living, in that sense of being able, because you need to keep those things going. So that's wonderful. You know, as I mentioned before, these are really soul issues here. It's the nature of the soul to be in balance, to be in equilibrium. And when things come to me to be resolved, that's what they're there for. If I'm thinking about them and when I'm not performing a task, what it's really saying is, I want to heal. I want to get back into balance on this. Whatever the matter is, a ruptured relationship, a fractured self-image, whatever it is, yeah? And so what that tells me is I need to spend some good quality, positive, conscious time exploring that and healing that. And give that gift to yourself. Allow yourself that opportunity. It's presenting because it wants to be resolved, so I need to allow myself the time to do it. There's some thoughts that we can park because they're more to do with ADLs, you know, activities of daily living, and we'll do them later, yeah? But if they're bigger issues, again, there's lots of kind of different techniques out there that can help resolve it. Maybe, you know, counselling is a very useful therapy. Just to ventilate can be a good way of helping you come into a process of equilibrium about and resolution about a matter that's bothering you. These things are all very good. Well, depending on what they are, I'd advise you to be discerning. But I do think that meditation is a beautiful way to do that. And it's not because I have to go into the detail of it in meditation, but that by filling my mind with positive feelings, good uplifting feelings, it naturally massages away something that needs to be resolved. So that's one aspect. If I'm looking for a solution, then again, I don't have to focus on that in my meditation. I just need to have that in my mind, perhaps at the beginning, and then I let it go in my meditation. And again, I'm increasing my beautiful soul space energy in my meditation. And I might find that the solution or the resolution comes to me later, or while I'm having a cup of tea, or while I'm in a quiet time, and not a really heavily active time, but a quiet time, while I'm weeding the garden or something like that. Yeah. And it comes to me, the answer comes to me, and I think, oh yeah, that's what I need to do to resolve this. There's another aspect too that we haven't really focused on in our conversation tonight, but that's my relationship with the divine. And in ruptured relationships in our life, which, you know, each one of us have experienced, perhaps we haven't had the ideal relationship with our father or our mother or a friend or whatever. But the qualities that I get from, say, friendship, are qualities of loyalty, of being able to talk very openly, of being able to share good times with, and all of these sorts of things. These, in my experience, these are experiences that I can actually have with the divine. So if my trust has been broken in a relationship, by forming that connection with the divine and feeling the trust and the love, the unconditional love that comes from that one, is a beautiful way to heal. And you can do this in your meditation. Journey inwards, really connect with yourself as a soul very deeply, and you start to feel that lovely sense of being centered and focused and stable and calm. And then with the power of your intellect, connecting in with the divine. And when I'm on that vibration, I automatically attract the vibrations of that one. And that one will is constantly there for me, and I'm tapping into these beautiful powers that come from that one and recharge me in that connection and in that relationship. So if it's something, sadness that I'm dwelling on, or a relationship that's ruptured, then in connection again with the divine, I'm able to heal that. Obviously you're aware of it, obviously you're wanting to resolve it, so these are some of the things that you can do to explore it and start to heal it.
Wow, thank you. There's lots of people who are saying thank you. They love the way you've put things and made it so accessible, Gabriella. So thank you very, very much for making the time. Gabriella, have a wonderful weekend. Thank you.
It's been beautiful sharing with you all. Thank you.